condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Hello and welcome back to Saxon Jacks. I'm Tim Holly. Just remember, over on the board, SP Futures up 250, NASDAQ Futures down 17. Some of that is because of Netflix, which is actually only down $45. It was down $65 last night, as a subscriber growth is not what people thought. We also have United Airlines lost $1 billion, but the stock's actually up 18 cents. So, interesting... you don't really know where to put these earnings because you don't know what the expectations were. Who are all these expectators, Mr. Weber?
Good question.
Just saying. So speaking of where are all these alligators, these allegation kind of guys, we have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. Kevin, are you an alligator or an expectator?
I'm not, I do expectorate once in a while.
Yeah, it's an expectator or an alligator, right? I think I'd rather be an alligator than an expectator. I don't know. What's the difference? Just saying.
The length of your legs, probably.
Yeah. The well, I can see you with the alligator arms whenever the check shows up, you know, type of thing.
I never, you know what? But I never had any alligator arms playing first base.
No, no.
You know, you hit that liner at me, I got it. You throw that, you put that throw in the dirt, I got it.
You were the Zeke Zamora of first base.
Yeah, could have been.
The Zeke Zamora was a legendary Cub first baseman, Manny. That. Evidently, the guy had like no range, but if he got it in the wickets, he never dropped the ball. But if it was outside the lines at all,
six inches either way, you were in trouble.
You were in trouble.
Well, actually, you know, Tom and I played together for a while, but we didn't, you know, like I had this other group on the north side, and we played together for over 20 years. And I'll tell you, we had, you know, the infield was so set. I played with the same people, except that every few years we'd seem to get a new third baseman. But the others, you know, I knew if the throw was going to be wild for each guy, I knew exactly which side of the base I'd have to be on if it was wild. So, you know, they just couldn't fool me. But the other thing was we had this very rangy second baseman. So honestly, if it was more than a step to my right to get a ball, I let it go. And it was rare that I would say, "Oh, I should have taken that one," because most of the time Mark was going to get it, and that's just the way it was. And I didn't need to do anything else except be there to catch his throw, which was pretty sweet.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, yep. It definitely. I mean, when people. Well, when you, it's so bizarre at different levels of ball. But if you have a team of guys that are reasonably decent, and all of a sudden you put them in the same position, and they all show up like every game, and they get used to playing with the people next to them, by the end of the season, you can really become an overachiever. Now, in the majors now, they want people that can play all these different positions, but those guys are a serious cut above. But a regular person is really, you're happy with where you are and with the people next to you, and you really do get better as the season wears on, the more you can maintain that. And I really do believe the year we won the Radio League, Manny, the team that we played in the finals Because they ring like hell.
Big time. Like, all of a sudden, there are 3, 4, and 5 hitters where guys we'd never seen before. We've been playing in that league for 10 years.
And the one guy hit the one, I think, is still in orbit. a big, huge lefty. Anyway, but the manager made he made the mortal sin, as the nun would say. You don't move people out of more than one position than one. That's a kiss of death for a good softball team. If your left fielder's missing, find a left fielder. Don't move your center fielder over, your second baseman to right field, and God knows, don't put 4 people out of position. Just put one new guy in, if you can. And they screwed up.
Same thing in the batting order. Same thing in the batting order that, if the number 2 hitter was going to miss the game and you got somebody to play for him, you know what, that guy was going into the 2 slot because we were keeping the continuity of the batting order, too.
We had, remember the game we played at years ago in Mount Greenwood, Kevin? When we're talking about reminiscing. We played this team, OB Joe's, and they remember it to this day because I ran into one of these guys at a financial conference and he still was pissed at me because we won. But they brought in some ringer, and the guy got a couple of hits, but he ended up making, he was out of position, and he ended up making the key error. And if you recall, in the Radio League final, the big boomer left fielder that they put wherever he was he short center or center field? He ended up making the game losing error for them. Even though he hit the ball. I mean, once I got past him, I figured I was okay for 9 guys. But that guy was, he was unstoppable. But once I knew I got past the 2 ringers, the rest of the guys were out of position, wrong spot in the batting order. As soon as we got to the 6th inning, I knew it was ours. And they thought it was all theirs because they were coming back at us. I go, you guys might as well sit down because I got 6 outs and I'm looking right at them. Right, Kevin?
Yeah.
I mean, you just
and you are it.
Yeah, you guys are it. But you know, it's
talk about putting pressure on people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting there going, you guys aren't walking. You're getting them right down the pipe. And if you want to get 6 hits in a row, I don't think you can do it. You know, and they didn't. So, but it's, you know, it is Wide World of Sports was right. I mean, the human drama of athletic competition. It's just people. It's politics. It's funny for me because I was watching, reading this article here this morning about Bill Miller, legendary. What are you going to do to be legendary anyway? You got to get on TV enough? He's a legendary, what do they call it doing here? He's a longtime value investor, whatever the hell that means. Bill Miller remains bullish on Bitcoin. Now, I'm going to be a bleep this morning here and say, bullish on Bitcoin means the bleep went out and bought some, and now he's telling everybody else to go buy it. Is that about?
Go bid up my assets.
Yeah, does that pretty much sum it up? Supply.
Yeah, it sort of does. No, but I've been given a little thought to Bitcoin. The one thing I can say for it is there's a finite amount of Bitcoin in the world. You can't just print new Bitcoin. I suppose somebody probably could. That could probably happen. But the way it's structured now, you can't just go create new Bitcoin. So in that respect, it's not going to... It may devalue, but it's going to devalue in different ways from the way the dollar does. Because the dollar, we just do it. You know, we just make it.
Supply is growing 2% a year, and demand is growing faster. And that means it's going higher, said Bill Miller on CNBC... said Kevin O'Neill on Stocks and Jack. Kevin O'Neill, Bill Miller, what's the difference?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I agree with the guy. What I am saying though is we compare it to the dollar, and I don't know that anything stands up in comparison to the dollar nowadays.
I don't think it's a bubble at all in Bitcoin. I think it's now the beginning of a mainstreaming of it. And I will say this, Kevin, to both you and he, because I'm always looking for truth in the other side. Not the other side, not that this is a debate, but you always, whenever people say, even if it's something you vehemently disagree with, generally there's a nugget of truth in there. If you were to say to somebody, this Bitcoin isn't worth squat, which is what I might say to somebody, the correct response, not that it's makes any difference, it's like, you know, your mom's ugly, so's yours. I mean, it's like, you know, like a fourth grader would say. I mean, we would try not to get to that level. you're right. The response would be, look what they're doing to the fiat currencies. What's the difference? Or you could say, look at this stock, like the delicatessen that was worth $100 million, the stock was valued at. What's the difference between a delicatessen that's not selling any sandwiches being worth $100 billion and Bitcoin that's worth nothing trading for $200 billion? I mean, we're at the point now with some of these stocks where does it even really matter if there's a stock there? So, yeah, on a relative basis, you wonder what is happening all over the place and what difference does it make if something doesn't really have a base to it. Is there really, matter of fact, I'll kick up my .org sort of thing here. What is the difference when you reach that level? And it's a dumb question, but it's a question, right? And what is the difference?
Well, yeah, and that's all I'm really saying is are we bleeped no matter which one we want to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, but you end up with whenever you start the thing about the Bitcoin, people are starting to find ways. Evidently, to margin it, and just like my tulip thing the other day, at some point, where do you get to? But here, we look at.
And yes, they are. It's subject to crash, to having severe impact, especially because so many more are putting money into it. There's so much more money tied up in it, and I don't think people really understand it at this point.
Well, it's gone way beyond. Any attempt at being a fiat currency, but an alternative currency, it's becoming an asset that just goes up every day. I mean, it's long past. I mean, I've mentioned on many occasions with the people doing what they're doing to the what was the Turkish one, Maddie, that I was talking about last week, whatever their dollar is, whatever the thing is in Iran, whatever it is in Venezuela or Argentina, whatever their currencies are. They're obviously taking them down to being worth nothing. Okay, so, but it wouldn't surprise me that worldwide, if people start not trusting the dollar or the euro, which you could get there, I mean, you could easily get there. I'm with you on that one, Kevin. You would think that some knave like Webby and Thomas or something would say, hey, look, we're going to create a new currency, and it's going to be based on oil or gold, go figure, or electric power or something. To where at the end of the day, you can turn this thing in and get, 4 gallons of oil or something. I mean, I could see the demand for something like that, an alternative way of doing business, sort of like, cigarettes in a concentration camp. But the idea that this thing just goes up every day, it's no currency at all. Why would you don't want a currency to move, do you? The currency is supposed to be the stabilizing point at which everything else gets valued as, right?
Well, that would be deluxe, yeah.
Yeah, that would be the idea. But to go back to arguing against myself here, which I do a lot, in 1913, what was the dollar to gold ratio? Outstanding dollars
to gold. Don't know. I mean, if you're asking me to make a guess, I'm not going to.
Okay, well, $28.81. What do you think it is now? It's $37,000. Well, at some point, you're just going to say, hey, what the hell's behind the dollar, too? I mean, I get it. I rant more about what the Fed's doing than anybody else. But you're right. At some point, you look at that and you say, tell me how bad Bitcoin is. I get it. But one happens to be backed by a government that still is a government at the moment, And we're not Iran yet. We're not Argentina yet. We're not Turkey, I'll use the term yet, but
working on it.
We're working on it. But the hope is that some cooler head will somewhat prevail. Now it's clearly not going to be, and it's funny as people anywhere you want to go, you can find an argument between the left and the right, and you look at Jerome Powell's actions in the last 2 years of the Trump administration and the first 6 months of this guy's. Tell me, there's a difference, Kevin? There's none. Right?
No, there isn't really. So, look, as far as the whole Bitcoin argument, the part that interests me more is the technology, the underlying technology, and its other applications.
But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I mean,
And that has nothing to do with what you're talking about, other than most of them are built on platforms that are that incorporate a cryptocurrency. So, as an example, Ethereum was built just for the idea of using smart contracts, which is really kind of a enhanced version of business rules. Like an event happens, and then a financial transaction is triggered. So, for example, you know, you're a trucking company, and you drop a load off at somebody's loading dock. As soon as that's accepted and it's scanned in, it's accepted, you know, the load's been inspected, it has what it's supposed to have, the quality's right, we accept it, then the trucking company, then that triggers a financial transaction where the trucking company gets paid. It's not that you couldn't do that with other technologies, but this is kind of the seamless technology for doing it. And as a result, though, you can imagine that that's beneficial, especially for small trucking companies, because your cash flow gets accelerated. You don't wait until the end of the month to send somebody a bill and then wait for another 30 days for them to pay you or whatever. You know, it's really, you know, it's good for economic efficiency. What I expect to happen is that there will be some cryptocurrency version of the dollar that the Fed creates, and that's ultimately what's going to fit in here. But the technology itself and the tie of the currency to the events and having that all seamlessly built together is interesting. I just had a group, you know, a class full of students build out the coffee supply chain on the Simba Chain platform, which is Ethereum based. We did that in class last Thursday, and I have another group that's going to do it tonight. So, you know, I'm kind of, you know, really getting my arms around it now and seeing what the possibilities are, and I think it's going to be pretty cool. That's where, you know, the whole cryptocurrency thing, I think, where the punchline is, and I just don't know what's going to be the surviving currency, and that would be my biggest reluctance to put any big dollar commitment behind it, because it may not survive.
Well, it is what you mentioned is interesting, and by the way, you know way more about it than I do. But it has people will that just bought Bitcoin will tell you, what about the blockchain? You didn't just buy the blockchain. You have nothing. You didn't buy anything with the blockchain.
Technology that exists. That's like buying a database.
But if you
database technology,
it would make it easier. Okay. But if I delivered, we'll go back to the Better World books, if I delivered the paper for the books today, all right, now granted this technology will allow the delivery to be there, the cash will change hands. If I wanted to pay you today, I could have given you a check today. I don't want to pay you today. I don't want to pay you for 30 days. That's the hang-up.
I understand that.
That's the hang-up. It's not that...
We're already pushing beyond that you know, with other initiatives too, so...
That
isn't even really the full point, because there's also the part of it that, you know, gives you the transparency all the way back to the origins of your supply chain, so
right.
That you can see what happened. Now, if you say I don't want something that was made in China because I have a problem with their human rights record, well, you know, what's China doing now? Because they have a lot of companies that feel that way. Well, they're laundering their stuff through other countries in the region, and in a blockchain world, that's pretty darn hard to spoof.
You know what? One of the starts is, you know, with a little bit of history. By the way, we're going to have Brendan. The reason why we haven't talked about the verdict so far is because we have Brendan calling, since he's an attorney and knows more about it than Kevin and me. We're going to do that in a few minutes. Hey, name me the two starts of when all this kind of what are we going to call it? Tracking shipments and so forth all started. There's two places they started, Kevin, for two totally different reasons. Well, I'll give you a clue. One was in railroads, because you never know where your boxcars were, right? So they ended up with the... Mm-hmm. Well, how many did they have? Was there like six stripes on the side of the car? Weren't very many.
Well, there are, but now they use so many of the standard shipping containers. When did that go in? Was that 80s or 70s? I'm trying to remember.
Well, they had trailer train during the
standardized shipping containers and all, how they're going to get labeled and so on. So So you still see box cars, but you don't see as many. What you see is a lot of flat cars that have shipping containers stacked.
Well, remember when they actually used to put the whole truck on it, the trailer train?
Yeah. So now they just lift the container off of the truck and accomplish the same thing. But you know that really has enabled all kinds of intermodal types of transit for products like that.
And the other one was a cranberry issue back during the Kennedy-Nixon campaign, where Kennedy came out with one of the greatest lines ever. I don't know if you remember this one, or I've heard of it. I don't think you remember it because we were pretty young. Maybe it's a good one. They ended up with cranberries were causing, I don't know if people were dying, but it was bad. Well, it turns out the only cranberries that were causing the problems were the ones from Oregon or someplace, and the ones from Wisconsin and the ones from Mississippi were fine. So they totally hustled up.
Mississippi. I don't think they don't grow them in Mississippi, do they?
I thought they did. I'm not sure. No, maybe not.
I thought it was New England.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Go on.
No, it's strawberries that are Mississippi. Cranberries are north. You're right. So they're doing a campaign thing, and so they hustled. They put the barcodes like real fast, Kevin, on the packages, so you could tell whether or not your cranberries were in Wisconsin where they were okay. Versus Oregon, where they weren't okay. So they're in Wisconsin. So Kennedy takes a big drink of cranberry juice, saying the stuff is okay because Nixon had done it the day before or was doing it. And he said something about, I'm convinced that the cranberries in Wisconsin are fine. He goes, but if they're not, at least you have the satisfaction of me taking the vice president with me. You know, they were like best friends, Kennedy and Nixon. I mean, in a lot of ways, because they had actually done when they both were rookie congressmen. They were sent out from Congress to do a debate in Ohio or someplace. They ended up sharing a room on a train on the way back and stuff, and became drinking buddies and everything. I mean, they were not enemies at all, Kennedy and Nixon. You imagine that today?
Yeah, no. I can. I think there's more collaboration than not. You know, there are some really big commerce related types of legislation where they really work well together. It's just not headline stuff. It's important, but
it doesn't sell.
You know, it is just not the stuff of headlines. And I think Carl talks about this a lot. He says, you know, if you focus on the wedge issues, then we have one view of what politics is, and wedge issues tend to be losers for people as well, because you turn off as many people as you excite. But if you look at a lot of the mundane legislation, the commercial code type of stuff that they work on and all that, there's a lot of collaboration in those areas.
Kevin, what do you think, before Brendan calls in, we're talking yesterday a lot about where people are heading with the tax issues and all the other stuff, and we're not going to be able to cover a lot of this today, but where did you come out on that, in the sense that I think a lot of what you're hearing from, certainly from the far left, is because today the big news is Cooperman going to show up for Elizabeth Warren challenging him to come in front of Congress and talk about taxes and so forth, and of course now he's declined to show up. I mean, I think a lot of what you see happening is when you don't have, I mean, we used to learn about this in school, for God's sake. If you don't have growth, if people aren't doing as well as they think they should be doing, and then you get some areas where there's uneven growth, you're going to start to have problems. That's what revolutions come from. Revolutions come from some people getting a bigger share of the pie than others. That's what caused the Russian Revolution. That's what caused, you know, a lot of them. I mean, that is where people sit there and say, I'm working my fanny off, and oh, by the way, some other guy is making $90 bazillion by just having an angle, as Bernie Madoff would say, and because government's favoring him, and I don't like it. I mean, why does this?
Well, and I think a lot of that starts off with good intentions, where we want to engineer something, we want a growth sector in the economy. We start talking about, you know, those kinds of things, or we want to stop, you know, bad things from happening, product liabilities and things, you know, whatever it is. And it starts out pro- probably with good intentions for the most part, only to have everybody start meddling in it and angling for their own piece of the pie, because once you start with the fine print, that's a good place to start lobbying.
But it depends on where you start.
Long story short is, then it's, you know, the system step by step becomes corrupt, and I think that's where we are now.
Well, I just real quick, because we got like 30 seconds. The issue with the Employee Retention Act, of course, I was reading that because of PTI, because we retained all our employees during the COVID and so forth, and I was reading it, and I got two paragraphs into it, Kevin, and I go, some bleep from the restaurant industry wrote this. The idea that you're cutting it down to only people that were not forced to close or were forced to close versus people that weren't.
Yeah, industries write up model legislation all the time, and then the staffers of Congress people start whacking away at it. But yeah, it definitely has its origins, and once that's the basis for it, then you may undermine some of it, but you're not making it all go away.
But the PPP,
you're not getting back to a baseline on that.
But all these acts, in somebody's mind, were to help people out, and yet at the end of the day, you look at it and you look at how uneven they all were. If you were a nun, you'd say there's sins in there. I mean, it's just it. Anyway, S&P futures up 25 cents. Nasdaq futures down 26. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jacks. To Smiley's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. See what Kevin just did to me? There's another page on this tax thing that I was looking at. Unfunded liabilities per citizen in the country is $492,000. I never saw that one before. I blame Kevin. SP Futures up 25 cents, and NASDAQ Futures...
I blame Kevin for a lot of the problems.
I know. It's unbelievable what he does. And he's distant. What if he was close, for God's sake? It would be even worse.
It'd be harder to blame him if he was close.
That's true. Dow Futures up 20. Individual stocks got Netflix down $46. Was down like 70 last night. Even though they beat on revenue, their subscriber growth isn't what people were looking for. It's all about subscriber vote. Of course, they could probably just raise prices like everybody else. We'll see if that works for them. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 34.2%. These guys were down yesterday. FTSE up 29.4%. CAC around up 40.7%. So we're down one day, up the next. Nikkei down 591, 2%. So that's 2 days in a row for those guys. Shanghai down a penny. I guess we'll call that one flat. Not sure why Japan is getting hammered the last couple of days, but Hang Seng down 513, 1.7. So the only one that's hanging in there is Shanghai. The other two are down pretty good. Yesterday was a way of review. Dow was down 256.8%. S&P down 28.7%. NASDAQ down 128.9. So it was a pretty big down day yesterday. That was before the Netflix news came out. A 10-year 1.57 unchanged. The Bund minus 0.26 unchanged. Japan actually down 1 basis point to positive 0.07. That's the lowest that's been in a while. Oil down 93 cents, 61.73. Brent down 88 cents, 65.69. Natural gas down a penny to 271. RBOB down 2 cents to 199. We've got gold up 460, 1783. Softer U.S. buck. Silver down a penny. Up 17 cents, 27.01 at 26.01. It hasn't been over 26 in a while. Copper up 2 cents, 424. You know, yesterday, Freeport was down. We were getting hammered yesterday, which is bizarre. I might actually take a look in that today. Plus, they got earnings this week. Crypto, our one, our Bitcoin down $2,000, 54,510. So that's down from a high of around 64 last weekend. So it's down, pushing 15%, 18% in a week. Ethereum, whichever that one is, down $66 to $2,241. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on a Wednesday morning. No issues at all coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower looking good. Stevenson quiet as well. Southside Expressway is behaving themselves, so we're off to a great start. Even Lakeshore Drive in both directions is looking good. Off the expressways, there's a crash at 31st Street right near the Tri-State. And then just north of there, or quite a bit north of there, there's a crash at Rand Road and Wolf in the northwestern suburbs. But everything else is all quiet. Weather today, lots of clouds, a bit of rain later on. Still very cold and about 17 degrees below normal, but somehow 7 degrees warmer than yesterday. So we're heading back in the right direction after yesterday was just miserable. But today, rain and a high of 44. Right now it's cloudy and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast and hot with a high of 90 today. Right now it's clear and 64. In sports, it was a good night for our Chicago baseball teams last night. White Sox got a lot of run support for Carlos Rodon, who struggled as far as walking people is concerned. But Sox were still able to get the win, beating Cleveland 8-5. Cubs beat the Mets in a pitcher's duel 3-1, and Craig Kimbrell walked the tightrope in the bottom of the ninth to get the save. Mets had the bases loaded late in that one down two, but Cubs squeak it out. And lastly, the Diamondbacks edged out the Reds 5-4. Chief.
Have you guys ever seen a catcher do catcher's interference two guys in a row on like strike three?
I have not seen that. You're talking about Grandal for the White Sox, right? Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen it twice in a row, but that's not a good half inning. And the pitcher's probably not thrilled with you.
Plus, it's not hard to hide it when the guy hits a mitt and the mitt flies off. Just saying.
That is a problem. Hey, as far as blame goes, just before you get on to anything else, is that I'm going to take the same position that Nixon took when he had his press conference announcing the firing of Haldeman and Ehrlichman, and that is, I take full responsibility, but not the blame.
It goes right up there with his press conference when he said, I am not a crook.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm going to use that.
Your president is not a crook.
I'm going to use that every day now. I take full responsibility, but not the blame.
I'm not so sure Venkman's going to buy that, much less Jill.
I don't think anyone would buy that.
So, Brendan, welcome. I understand you had. You'll be happy to know that the phone guy on the one line that's worked for 11 years found me at home the other night on my cell trying to change that one out. And I said, the only one that really works, that's the one you want to change? Well, yeah. Okay.
I'm going to blame Kevin for all my troubles getting in this morning, as long as he's going to take full responsibility. But I think he should take the blame.
I do take full responsibility. Brendan, I think the blame's coming your way, though.
So, Brendan,
hey, I think this is the first, Brendan. I don't think we've been on together before. I'm not sure. What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to make good radio by violently disagreeing with you? Should I, you know, take the Jane, you ignorant slut approach here?
Well, I don't know if you have to do that. I think we can agree to disagree sometimes and agree to agree on other times.
Way too conciliatory.
Well, I'm pretty interested to hear what you have to say about the decision. I know Tom has some good questions about it, and so I'm going to lay back and listen. I really sort of have one of my own, but let's see what our erstwhile host has here.
Well, Brendan, I just the only question I have, because I didn't pay all that much attention. Actually, really couldn't, because it really wasn't, a lot of it wasn't filmed. But I thought, just being a dumbo, I thought the charges were kind of either or. I didn't think he could be convicted on all three. Does that make a difference, or does that surprise you? What does that even mean?
Well, I wasn't surprised that they convicted him on all three. I mean, it would have been really weird if they had convicted him on one but not another, because they're all part of the same act, and there's different levels. So, I mean, I think the reason they brought three different charges was that if the prosecutor wasn't able to prove the most serious charge, then they could fall back to a second charge or even the third charge, thinking that something was wrong, but trying to get him off with a less severe charge for conviction. So that really didn't surprise me. But if you get enough evidence to convict on the most serious charge, the other two should follow. And it's usually just a tactic that is being done to make sure that he's convicted of something. I mean, if you think really that the most serious charge is the one for which he should be convicted, you have the lesser charge to allow for a little wiggle room on the part of the jury.
Okay, so it's not unusual.
No.
Okay, I just didn't.
And the interesting thing about that is that, you know, since he was convicted of all three, and all three crimes, all three charges stemmed from the same event, the sentences will be served concurrently, not consecutively.
Okay.
When you're convicted of multiple charges of something like this, usually under state law, it's one or the other. So, for example, in this case, because the three charges, I think the terms, the maximum charge, the maximum time for them are 40 years, 25 years, 12 years. So if he was given the maximum on all of those, instead of looking at, 65, 75 years, you're looking at a maximum of 40 years, because time served for one counts as time served for the second and the third charge, as opposed to he has to serve the 40-year charge first, then he serves the 25-year, then he serves the 10 or 12 or whatever.
The other question I had is just the way it's being perceived. Is this is a massive change in how, you know, people look at policing? And to me, this is somewhat of a, let's hope it's a one-off, where somebody is in a position where he really can't do much with them being handcuffed, and stuff happened after somebody was handcuffed. It was like the guys in Baltimore that were put in the paddy wagon, and they drove around 1,000,000 miles an hour and banged the hell out of the guys in the back of the... I mean, that's totally different to me than like the kid in Pilsen, where it's a split-second decision where did he have a gun, didn't he, did you think he did, were you afraid for... to me, they're totally separate events. I mean, am I wrong?
I agree. I agree. And to conflate the two situations, I think the three ones that are in the news right now, the Chauvin one with the trial ending yesterday, the Dante Wright guy in the suburbs of Minneapolis, and the kid in Pilsen, are three completely different scenarios, and with various levels of egregiousness or police action, whether it's misconduct or justified. I think that Chauvin was the most egregious. It was pretty clear that he did something that shouldn't have happened. And even the fact that he kept his knee on Floyd's neck for 3.5 minutes or something like that after he had passed out and couldn't find a pulse, that was pretty egregious. In the case of the kid who got shot by the other police officer, she reached for a gun instead of a taser. You know, that could be a mistake. I'm not judging whether it is or not, but I mean, that's at least a reasonable conclusion that she made an honest mistake in wound up killing somebody. As you pointed out, the case in the Pilsen area was a completely different scenario where, you know, something happened. The gun was shot in the area which first attracted the police there. The kid was running away. The pictures show that he had a gun in his hand. He flipped it away right before he was shot. That is a split-second decision on behalf of the cop. So, I mean, to conflate those three things are three completely different scenarios that that I don't think should be conflated in these in the analysis.
Well, you have, you know, there's an awful lot of things going on to me, Brandon. I'm just, you know, Kevin, feel free. Is that we have, you look at some of the carjackings, and you're looking at younger and younger people.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the actual dirty work, be it the guns, be it the carjacking. You have clearly, I won't say a hole in the law, because I don't know what you do with a 13, 14-year-old kid, but that this is dropping down. The parents appear to are either not involved or talk about shirking any kind of blame. They're just not involved. So somebody, you're dropping that down. You have an awful lot more, you know, seemingly, I mean, every weekend when you enter the area, it's, I mean, every innocent person. I was getting my car fixed 6 months ago, and the ladies in there were talking about they heard shots flying, you know, the empty lot next door, where they live. They hear them like one night a week. I mean, it's, and yet we're asking people to stop this stuff, and then it's like a war zone, and doesn't absolve anything that this guy did in Minnesota. I mean, for God's sake. I mean, if you're going to do that to somebody, you at least have to have the common sense and know when to stop. You know?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I would never do that to somebody, but if I did, I sure as hell wouldn't make it to, like, I was trying to, like, I was dead. I mean, it's mm-hmm. insane. But the, I mean, everybody knows, I'm going to say 95% of the policemen are terrific people, yet every policeman knows a guy who shouldn't be there. A guy or a lady.
Right.
I mean, that's, mm-hmm. so I mean, we have all this stuff percolating up, and all you have, instead of trying to find solutions, I mean, I was listening to some people last night, you know, and all they were doing was, you know, every single white person, white cop, you know, has got this, you know, can't wait to, you know, get in the hood and find somebody they can shoot. Now, come on, that's as ignorant as the other way. I mean, we're never going to get anywhere that way. I mean, does anybody, this generalization, you know, I've never generalized anybody. I'm like John Wayne in The Shootist. I don't want people putting their hands on me. I don't do it to other people, so I'm not going to let them do it to me. I don't generalize people. I don't want to be generalized. Is that wrong?
No. And I've got a statement that I use all the time is, you know, don't be the stereotype. Don't put yourself in a situation where you give fodder to the other side. That you're exactly who needs to be acted upon in a certain way. Because nobody wants to be put into their stereotype. And you got to be careful when you're acting that way. But, Kevin, you had a question, too.
Yeah, I do have a question. And that is, I think I know the answer. But when the judge made the admonition a couple of days ago after Maxine Waters' comments that... you know, that the defense, they may be setting up grounds for the defense. I mean, you know, I think the defense would be that you have people outside and trying to intimidate the jury. And, mm-hmm. and it's not just Waters. You know, hers is splashy in the news, but there's a lot of people. Is there a case for appeal, in your opinion, saying, it, you know, the venue should have been changed, the jury should have been sequestered, et cetera?
I don't think so right now, based on the facts that I know right now. And I think my answer would be different if the jury came back after 10 days or 15 days of deliberation instead of 11 hours. because I think that the basis for that argument on appeal is that you had one holdout juror or two holdout jurors for conviction on any one of the counts, and he or she said, finally, that they, you know, went and voted for conviction, but only because the other 10 people beat them up to the point that if you don't convict, the city's going to burn. So, you know, I think that that would be a factual determination because they would poll the jurors afterwards to see just what their thoughts were in case anybody wanted to reverse their verdict afterwards. The fact that it came back so quickly, I think, undercuts that argument that they were not looking because of what's going on outside. And the fact that they were sequestered also means that they're, you know, they're not supposed to have any outside influence to what's going on during the deliberation. So I think that argument may have been available had it been a longer deliberation, but not now.
Well, weren't they just, they were just sequestered though, right? The last day or something?
Yeah. Yeah, Maxine Waters' time was over the weekend, and they were sequestered at the end of closing arguments.
What are we going to do about her? Is she going to resign?
Well,
no.
I don't know if she's going to resign or not.
You
can ask.
No,
you can ask,
she's got people defending her.
You can ask
the
similar question about
Mark Sicilia
and Matt
Gaetz.
Are they going to resign?
She's got cover.
Another case, but maybe something. How exactly did the Rod Blagojevich, who I'm no fan of, how did he not win an appeal on his conviction after the shenanigans they did to the holdout juror in the first case? How was that case not moved out of Illinois? I mean, how could he ever have gotten a fair trial in that second case after what they did to that first juror?
Well, you know, when you look at the second case, when he finally took the stand, the first question that the prosecutor asked is, "Mr. Blagojevich, you're a convicted liar, aren't you?" That kind of sums it up right there, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess I've said I'm no fan, but I don't see anywhere in the little bit of, you know, whatever law you took. I didn't take any law, but I took some stuff for about, you know, justice in the U.S. and civics. I never heard of a holdout juror demonstrating on his front lawn and then trying to do the same case like 2 months later in the same town where you certainly send a message to anybody who voted that way the second time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how bad does it have to get, I guess is my question. It was pretty bad.
Well, and that's always a decision for the judges that are involved in the case as to whether they think there's been enough prejudicial information in the general public and the sphere to taint the trial.
How could there have been more?
Be different at different times.
How could there have been more? they were camped out on the guy's lawn or the lady's lawn.
I can't answer that question. I mean, there's no hard and fast rules that say if you do this, you have to remove it. If you do that, you don't have to remove it. There's no bright line. It's always a determination on all the pertinent facts at the time,
so,
and it's a judgment of the judge. And if it's appealed because of it should have been a change of venue, or the change of venue should have been granted, that goes up to the appellate court as to whether the appellate court agrees or disagrees.
All right. So I guess to sum up, your opinion is in this particular case, everything worked as it was supposed to. And I actually feel that way. But your opinion is worth more than mine on this.
Well, I think that
we kind of lost that.
The government cut him out?
We were breaking up a little bit.
The government cut him out. The satellite.
Brendan, are you still there?
There you go. I'll jump in on that too. Yeah, it seems. Look, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't like it was a one-day trial. You know, there was a lot of evidence presented. Both sides had lots of witnesses for their side of the case. So it would be pretty hard to say that, you know, anything was left out, shortcut. You know, that there were any shortcuts or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this case it's clear that the jury had an opportunity to look at all of the evidence that was mm-hmm. that was available, and what did it take them? A couple of hours to have a verdict. So
remember that process.
I have to trust the jury.
Usually, the process in the jury deliberations is that they review all the evidence before they take a vote. So the fact that it took 10 hours doesn't mean that they were deliberating and arguing back and forth about each one of the three charges. they'll review the entire case. They'll say, for the count of second-degree manslaughter, here's what the prosecutor need to prove. Here's the evidence. And then I don't know if they'll take a vote on that one, or they'll go to the second charge and then the third charge. So that's going to take a considerable amount of time, a chunk of time. The fact that it took 10 hours means that they were pretty decisive and without any indication that there was going to be a hung jury of any sort on that. So, I mean, that was one key element. The other thing that I think helped here in the quickness of the decision was you had the acting police chief and you had another couple of cops and you had the paramedic who testified against Chauvin and his actions here. So I think that has a lot more credibility and weight than the guy that they brought in who said, yeah, it could have been carbon monoxide poisoning. But, you know, the defense kept throwing things in, and I think that was a really wild argument that the guy made on the last day, that it could have been carbon monoxide poisoning because of where his head was next to the tailpipe of the car. And it wasn't even indicated whether the car was running or not. So it's kind of hard to get carbon monoxide poisoning if the car is turned off. And, you know,
I don't think you get carbon
if the car is turned on.
I don't think you get carbon monoxide out of a new car. You get carbon dioxide after.
Well, that's what they said. It was a hybrid car.
I'm going to ask you guys a poll here. I'm one of these guys that actually, despite all the crap that's going on in the world, and I use that term on purpose, I actually think that the people who sit down there, the 12 people, it was roughly half minority, half white, half women, half men, I think that their job is to go through all the stuff and to come out with a decision, and I think they did that. And I think that's how our system works. And I think every single one of those people knows 100 times more about this case than I do.
Absolutely.
And I think that my job is to trust that they did it properly and that they did the right thing. Now, mm-hmm. what percentage of the population now does that put me in where every other person sees a two-second video or a tweet or something and feels that they know more than the jury?
Oh, I think
in this case, I think
on.
It puts you in the majority, Tom.
I hope so.
That's just my. I don't think there's many people that ever looked at that video in the first place and said, "Oh, this is okay." You know, there's an explanation for this. There's some, but I think most people looked at that. You know, certainly, you know, in my my circle, which is includes a lot of very conservative people. Not that this is in any way should be a liberal or conservative type of case, but most people look and go, no, you know, that was over. That whole confrontation was over long before he gave it up. Chauvin mm-hmm. gave it up.
But I'm just saying,
I agree with that.
I really want us. I'd really like to stick with our system instead of the new system of the court of public opinion.
The court of public opinion has been around for a long time, Chief. It's just that it's getting more play right now because of media coverage and cell phones and things like that. But the court of public opinion, I mean, if you go back to some newspaper accounts of some crimes from even the time the Lindbergh baby or Sacklin says, there's a lot of public opinion that appears and people make decisions. I think what's different now, or what makes the Chauvin case different, is the number of cell phones that were available and recording that for a long period of time. Because just think about it, if it had not been for the cell phone video and taken from different angles, you would have had Chauvin's word against the word of some of the witnesses with no verification, no backup. And that really would have been a polarizing event for people who think a cop can do no wrong. He had all of the rights to do what he did. And those who say that this was a lynching of sort because of the actions of the cop.
Well,
and nobody would have been able to dispute either one of those. It would have gone to the natural tendencies, natural prejudices of whoever was listening to the argument.
Well, if you whack somebody over the head with a billy club, even if it's not deserved, and by a lot of people's, there's a big difference between something you heal up from and something you die from.
It's kind of a
barrier you can't walk back, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and I don't
and
know.
Obviously,
that
was also
that Chauvin
what happened
intended
with
to kill him or anything
though,
like that. It looked downright sadistic, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say, despite the man, I think being guilty. He is guilty, and I would agree. And again, I don't know as much as those guys do, guys and ladies. But I mean, the fact is, I don't think he. he left home that day to go kill somebody.
Well, he was convicted of unintentional manslaughter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so what is the... Yeah. Wait, it literally is unintentional. There's no argument there.
Well, it was second-degree murder. So, yeah, it wasn't premeditated. No, so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't... So, yeah, it's a... Well, anyway, it looks like...
And Manny makes a good point. It's not that even when he first tried to arrest Floyd, he said, I'm going to kill you.
No.
He was negligent and reckless in his behavior and used unreasonable force that resulted in the homicide.
Right. And
yeah.
You know, Floyd...
So your bigger problem is he inclined to use unreasonable force on a regular basis? And
right.
So that's not the same as saying I left house saying I'm going to find me somebody to kill today.
Right.
What it is though is it's saying, you know, that you and you see this at times. I go back years. You know, we were talking softball earlier today. We had we played a team on a regular basis up north in Evanston of mostly Chicago cops. And there were a couple of them that were just, you know, they were always looking for a fight. They were always, you know, like always just, you know, people that had you walking away saying, oh my God, if this is our police, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't everybody on that team, but there's a few that I sure wouldn't want them to stop me because it could escalate into something very easily because that's just
mm-hmm.
the nature of the people. The police departments have to weed that out.
And they don't.
Yeah, and it is interesting. I mean, I remember growing up and there were guys in high school and you knew even at that time that they were either going to become a cop or they were going to be a convict.
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
You didn't know which side of the line they were going to fall at some point, but you knew by their behavior and their attitude that they were going to be one or the other.
God. All right, guys. Thank you very much, Brendan. Thank you, Kevin. Talk to you on Friday. SB Futures down a buck. Chuck, NASDAQ Futures down 29. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Ollie, just Brent Weber. SP Futures down 2 now, NASDAQ Futures down 32. We have Verizon came out and they beat on top and bottom line, but the stock, I've got the stock down 30 cents, so not much of a move there. The straddle was a dollar, so well within the straddle range, although selling straddles for a dollar when straddle being the call and the put into earnings is tough. You wouldn't want to have done that in Netflix down $45, even though $46. It's down like 70 last night. Russell, how are you?
I understand. I'm doing well. I traded Netflix.
I'm sure you were shorted. Because you know,
I was.
You know
I
everything.
I wouldn't be so joyful if I wasn't. I sold that out of the money call spread in the other direction. So as long as it doesn't bounce $100, I'm in good shape.
I actually did something in there. I look and see, it's kind of a volatility play, where I look and see where the straddle is. And then I look, mm-hmm. I look at the weekly time spread calendar. And if I can get the time spread for less than 10% of the price of the straddle, it's a reasonably, they should sort of line up, and they don't, Russell, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But the straddle was $40. And I was able to get the time spread for $1.75. I only did it real small, but of course I did the at the money, and now it's down mm-hmm. $45. So I'll be lucky to scratch it. But as a volatility play, it was a good do. Now, mm-hmm. obviously, I picked the wrong strike. I should have picked the strike down $45, which I never would do. I'm not trying to speculate on the price because I don't know where it's going to go. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I just do it as a it's in my feeble brain, it's a misvaluation. Because you'll find some where the straddle's $1 and the time spread's like 50 cents. And you're going, what's that all about?
Well, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I mean, so this one happened to be a real good one or look like mm-hmm. it. And now, you know, I'll be lucky to scratch it. But the thing of it is, if I do scratch it, it means that it was a good trade because I'm 45 hours away from my strike and I scratched it, you know, which is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a lot of, it's not about sometimes if you're the difference between a professional trader and a retail trader. And long, I mean, everybody knows, well, you should know before you trade. You can do the hockey stick approach. Okay, if I buy the IBM 50-60 call spread and it goes to 60, guess what? I'm going to make money. Well, duh. You know, hopefully, I mean, you know, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then, right? The idea is to take the ones that aren't so good and massage them back to break even when they should have been a loser. So that's the mark of somebody who can do something in the middle to adjust and maybe come back even when you shouldn't have. That's because everybody's going to have once in a while a stone cold winner or a loser. It's like what they say about baseball, Matty, back in the day was no matter how good you are, you're going to lose 40 games. No matter how good you are, you're going to mm-hmm. win. Bad you are, you're going to win 40 games. It's the 80 in the middle that make a difference.
That's an Ozzie Guillen statement.
Yeah, well, that was a Leo DeRocher way before Ozzie, but
you got to steal from the best.
Yeah, well, Leo, I don't know if he was the best, but he was the oddest, that's for sure.
No, when I mean the best at throwing interesting quotes out there.
Oh God, yeah. you know what we should do every day? We should start the show with a yogiism. There's some really good ones.
Oh my goodness, right.
So how are you?
Oh. Bitcoin, it's just as good as money.
Yeah, okay. It's just as good. So your buddy Bill Miller, now that he bought some, says it's the wave of the future. Your buddy,
I love how everybody's my buddy.
Well, all the guys that immediately buy something and turn around and tells the next guy to buy it, you know, those are the kind of guys you hang with. Just saying.
Yes, the old talk. That's one of the things I really like about being more of an educator and is that I'm never, when I talk about stuff, I'm definitely not talking my book.
No, that's true. You don't, but sure. I could see you, I could see Webby doing this. He's more of a lobbyist type than you are. I could see him at some party, the nice glass of white wine with his pinky pointing straight up, buying a piece of commercial real estate saying, you know, I think this commercial real estate's the way to go. It's the investment of the future. By the way, I just bought some. You guys should try it. By the way, mine's for sale.
Here, I got a great one for you to buy.
Yeah, just so happens at this price, I'll let this one go. Yeah, I won't want to, but if just because I know you, I'll let it go at this price. God, how much of that's going? I mean, it is stunning. Scaramucci's putting together a fund for Bitcoin, and he's all over the thing, right? He's all of a sudden real bullish.
Yeah, he has been for a while.
Yeah,
he was actually I met him for 5 seconds. One time. in Ireland, of all places.
Really?
He was. I don't know if he was, what he was doing a little media tour for, but I was on a big family, you know, my wife's extended family, return to the motherland trip around Ireland about 5 years ago or so, and he was there.
I need to do that. Did you have a good time? Did you play any golf?
I did not play any golf. No, that's Scottish golf.
Yeah.
No, I haven't played any golf.
One of my brother had a well, still a friend, a lady friend in Notre Dame, and she married some Irish guy and moved over there. And once in a while, they come over here, and he's a terrific guy. God, is he a good golfer, though. I think he shot like 74 big run, man.
Wow.
That's a...
Well, they got some of the world's best courses over there, so...
I was going to say, it's a little it's like, you know, being in the major leagues and then going down to AAA for a little, or AA for a little while.
Yeah, plus they're all in good shape. They all walk, you know, they just get their clubs and off they go. It's a, you know, it's an athletic event, not just hitting the ball around, so...
The food any good over there?
It's okay.
Yeah,
I'm not really a foodie person.
Okay. I imagine it's terrible over there.
My mother went over there years and years ago, and she said it absolutely sucked.
Right. I imagine it's awful, but you never know.
As we met this young lady, there used to be a... They still have that total rag newsletter that they used... Remember when they used to produce out of New York? It was all on the same floor, Russell, where it was like all the dirt about the trading floors. There was the futures one. There was the one from New York floor.
Yeah.
They still produce that? Is that thing still coming out?
I haven't seen it. You know, we can all just tell each other instantly on, you know, on the social media. So.
Yeah, so they probably don't have it anymore. Well, one of the young ladies out there we meet for dinner, and she was his Irish boy. She was Irish. She could get her name was Neve was her first name. Talk about Irish. And I said something about, was the food over there any good? Oh, what'd she call me? Oh, bloke or something. When you can walk across the beer, you don't have to eat. Or something along those lines. something along those lines. So when you have to walk, when you can walk across the beer, you don't have to eat any solid food. I'm going, okay.
I'm trying to figure out what it means when Russell says he's not a foodie. Does that mean you just eat like hot dogs and macaroni and cheese every day, or what?
Well, that was me as a kid. I had an aunt who said that I didn't live to eat; I ate to live. I make sure I got that right.
Yeah. So, okay.
I'm just not. I'm like, you know, red meat, potatoes, very basic. Although I used to get ragged on that an awful lot by my parents. What are you going to do when you go to a business blah blah at dinner and dinner? And I went to this tasting thing once in Atlanta when I was working at a hedge fund, and I was the only person that tried everything they put in front of us.
Oh wow!
And they were putting some exotic stuff in front of us. So I basically my response when I was a kid was, "Well, I'll eat what they put in front of me, but I won't like it," and that's what I do.
We were at a wine tasting thing down in Florida. We went for one of those boondoggle things with the member firm guys. So there, whatever the place is, that there's a, it's a, it's the only 5-star resort in Florida. It's over, I don't know where now it is, Naples or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
So they had this wine tasting, and it was one of these deals where you're supposed to, you get all the flights, and of course they got some guy who's, as Audrey had to mention, that he was drop dead gorgeous, the guy. Of course all the women were very interested in the dude. And, you're supposed to take a sip, and then you had your big thing. You're like supposed to spit it out and everything. Well, Bill Flores was the vice chairman. I love Bill. I noticed there were two people in the place. I wasn't doing any spitting. Neither was he. We were drinking the whole flight. why am I spitting out this good wine? Why would I ever do that? So Audrey goes, "You're supposed to be spitting it out." I go, "I'm not spitting it out. But I don't spit at the ball game. I'm not going to spit here, for God's sake." But we drank it all. We were fine. We were okay.
But I never spit the wine.
No, you gotta drink the wine, for God's sake. And
aren't you kind of particular about food too? Like you don't eat a lot. You don't try a lot of exotic things, do you?
The stuff that if it's moving or something, no.
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone's eating stuff that's moving.
No, I like just about everything. No, I mean, I like there isn't really a food that I don't like.
Oh, well, that's good.
But I mean, if I was in China, I mean, we had. When Chris used to come on the show, he said they had dog over there and he ate it. I go, "You couldn't have gotten me to eat that no matter what."
Yeah, I'm not eating dog.
No, I mean, not we're Venkman. I never talked to you again, for God's sake.
Yeah, no thank you.
But I mean, I'm not doing that. I mean, I'd be rice and vegetables in China. That would be it. Nothing moving. Anyway, just saying. So, Russell, we had Mike Hart was on Tuesday, and we're talking about the VIX and how the VIX is sliding down here, and we're seeing the movement during the day. I mean, the trade the last 2 weeks is, shall we say, sucked. I mean, we are where we are at 9:15, and that's where we close. And there's nothing. There's nothing going on. And you know, even the people who call and trade all day are like, "It was the last time you heard from that guy." You know, I'm sure it'll pick up again, but it doesn't mean that the chances of any kind of a real move are less. And that's the weird part. Mike is a in a different way. He's as much of a VIX maven as you are. They do all the research for Tasty Trade and so forth. And but it's just because your day to day moves are slinking into the sunset here doesn't mean that some big event like a Netflix, like a Bitcoin collapsing over the weekend, or doesn't mean that there's any less chance of that, is there?
No, not really. In fact, it's rare that VIX is prepped for the big moves that we get. It started to work its way higher last year when the COVID situation was coming, but the times that volatility ends up being mispriced are, you know, usually when it's low. And I'm surprised at how low it is, but I think what you have to do is you have to take into consideration, because it's a 30-day risk measure, what could go wrong in the next 30 days? And, you know, how many landmines are there potentially out there? And I just don't, you know, the only thing that I can see going wrong right now is if earnings are, you know, really awful, and I don't think Netflix is indicative of all companies during earnings season, because they were uniquely benefiting from the COVID thing, and now they're just getting hit by a lot of competition because there's so many different streaming services with that one. So yeah, I don't think people are overly concerned about earnings, and we don't have anything truly macro coming out for at least a couple of weeks. We just got the inflation numbers behind us, didn't we?
Well, if you think they're behind us, or you think they're just starting.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like the days of the monthly, I think it was last week, the monthly PPI, CPI week was last week.
Right, but you're way too old of a cat to think that somebody who's got millions of dollars in bonds and in fixed income is going to wait for the next CPI number if they think.
Oh, no, they're not going to wait for it, but the thing that's going to hit the overall general market is going to be when it actually shows up in a number and more people start focusing on what you and I have been focusing on forever, which is that we're making less relative to what things cost.
I was digging through and I couldn't find it. I mean, I guess if I was, I don't know how to read Dutch anyway. If I went back to some library over there and dug around in 1637, I guess I could figure out what day it was that the actual tulips turned south. But someplace, somewhere, we're seeing people talk about this inflation creeping up, but we still don't have anybody definitively come out and say it's way worse than people thought, and this is what it means to everybody. And actually,
yeah.
and actually writes a half a column piece in the New York Times, or nobody writes there anymore. Says this is what it means. This is what's going to happen to this person, this person, this person. And I don't think that just the general people like you and I talking about it from our history, I don't think people at 40 and 50 have any idea what we're talking about.
They don't. We talked about this with the students I have. I keep telling them it's going to happen, and they roll their eyes at me like the uncle at Thanksgiving that tells them what they should do with their life.
Yeah.
I keep saying, you can say it over and over again, but until they actually experience it, they're not gonna really know what I'm talking about. And then they're gonna go, oh, that's what that guy was talking about. Kind of like when we grow up, we're like, oh, our parents actually didn't know a few things they were talking about.
But I don't see, the interesting part is what I don't remember about the last one, because I was still in college when it really started happening, and I was worried about, you know, where the dollar beer was more than I was the inflation. Well, I guess that's part of the same thing, right? But I don't really remember the part. I remember very well the S end, where you had everybody had cost of, well, not everybody, but a lot of the unions and so forth had cost of living adjustments. And I remember doing all the cost of living stuff for the suppliers at Pullman and for the contract that we had with Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember all that part. I don't really remember the first few years of it. Like I say, I was just, you know, 17, I'm in college. Of how people got, you know, sniped in the behind the first few years when you didn't have the cost of living adjustments to where your gasoline doubled in a year and this doubled and food went up because of everything was, I mean, I don't really know what people's actions were because I was living in a dorm in South Bend in like 1971 mm-hmm. and 72 when it actually started. I mean, I don't know, I have a feel for the hurt of those first couple of years before the unions were able to, you know, get their cost of livings and those kinds of things and actually, you know, buffer themselves away from the thing. So, I mean, when I act like I know all about the system, I know a lot about the last two thirds of it, not so much about the first third of it.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, that's an admission. I mean, but right now, what we're seeing is the first third of it. I mean, one of the guys here in the building, Matty knows, he does a lot of work for people's, you know, homes and remodels and stuff. And his first thing last Monday morning was, I can't believe, oh, big guy, I can't believe that I priced this job out. And I'm doing some work at my house. And I went and I bought 5 2x4s and they were $7 a piece. And 2 years ago or last year, they were $2.50. You know, so, I mean, there's already people that have quoted jobs. You know, you might say, they'll say a guy like you, somebody might have quoted an extra room on your house or making your one car garage a 2.5 car garage or something. And the quote's just sitting there. And I'll bet that somebody, if you call up and say, hey, Joe, is that quote still good? And Joe foolishly says yes, Joe's going to lose money on the job right now because of the price of lumber.
You know, I'm, let's just say I'm not buying lumber every day, but for the heck of it, I went to Home Depot's website just to look at lumber prices. And you know how around Christmas time, if you're trying to get something from Target, back around Christmas time, we were trying to buy something specific in a specific color for my wife from Target. And we got a lot of Targets in the Chicago area. The closest one that had what we were looking for was like 50 miles away. If you go through the lumber part of the Home Depot website, a good portion of the different types of lumber you want are on back order, and you can't get at a local store.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So there is a show. I mean, I was just trying to find something, you know, in the real world, anecdotal, that kind of backed up what everybody's been seeing with lumber. And then apparently the raw material part of it, there's no problem with that. And it's actually like some of the places that you would buy to harvest the lumber, the timberland, is actually really cheap right now. So it's a disconnect in the supply chain more than anything else. It's not that it's kind of like back in from what I've gathered, it's kind of like back in the Depression time when farmers would dump out milk because it wasn't worth it for them to take it to market. They weren't going to drink it.
Right.
It was just going to go bad. And I don't think it's that there's not enough lumber. It's just that there's a disconnect in the supply chain.
You're the professor, so I shouldn't be cautioning you, but I will say this: if we could spin the little dude out of his grave and bring and stick Milton Friedman across from me, he would say, Russell, don't write that down. That's a D paper. Because it may be that you can find a supply chain problem in lumber, but it's a monetary phenomenon. It just happens that lumber is just the weakest point.
It's a matter of there's enough money floating around that there'll still be people that'll pay for it at the price, much higher prices.
It just finds. I mean, we thought in the 70s it was those dirty Arabs. You know, cutting back on the oil, right?
Right.
And it just so happens that's where it spit out. Now, this time, for the last 12 years, and that's why I believe we are not hearing it so much, is because the people who are on TV You know, not guys like John, because John's actually independent, Dr. J. But the I use the term bumps on CNBC. They talk about no inflation. They're stone cold. They're not dumb people at all. They're actually very bright, but they're stone cold ignorant about this particular topic because they have not dug into their last 12 years at CNBC and saw how much CNBC has had to pay extra over those 12 years for their health insurance. So it's not part of their I use the term too dumb. I'm being nasty this morning to realize that could have been a raise for them if it didn't go into their health insurance. So it's not something that they write a check for. Because when you think, right. when you think about it, the biggest bitch you get out of anybody is your gas prices go up. Now, why is that? It's probably the one thing left other than maybe food, and even that, you throw it all in a basket and you figure out how much it is so you get to the cashier. The one thing left that you buy one product and pay for that product right staring you in front of the face with the price is your gasoline. Mm-hmm. And yet,
even when you're not buying it, you see the number driving to work.
So even with my, you know, I drive more than I should, and I've got a Suburban that gets 11 miles to the gallon. Even for me, you know, if it goes from $2 to $4, all right, it's $75 a month. Okay, mm-hmm. that's not fun, but it's nowhere near. What is that? What percentage of what the money I spend on rent and everything else? What is that? It's not 20%. But it's right in front of your face.
Exactly.
So it gets where if it's the hospitalization paid for by PTI. I mean, if I wasn't an owner, I wouldn't even probably care. But I am. If you work for Aetna, and they had to pay up $10 last month for your health care, you don't know, and B, you don't care. The only thing you care about is if your deductible goes up, right?
Right.
But now gasoline. Holy bleep, Batman! I paid $2 last week, and it's $2.25, and I bought 10 gallons. That's $2.50. So what? The price of the drink you bought last night's $10, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying so what, but you know what I'm talking about. Now, if you're a trucking company, you know that's a different story. Or if you're if you're somebody like Audrey, who puts on you know God knows how many miles a year driving people around for real estate, I mean that's a different story. I mean for me, driving back to forth to work, it's an irritant. It's not anything really, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like my really good one is since I've been on the show with you, I think it's been 2 or 3 years now, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah.
I go and get the exact same thing at breakfast after I'm with you when I come down there at the exact same McDonald's. And it has gone from $6.35 to $8.10 in a 3-year period.
You see, now those guys, I would
say. And some of it's tax. I know some of it's taxes. But that's a pretty hefty increase over a 3-year period. And because I buy it with an app, even though you've told me I'm putting people out of business when I do it that way, I can go back through the history and see what I've been paying.
That's true. Now, I would say you'd have to be a way smarter man than me to try and figure out if prices are going up at McDonald's or not, because there's the dollar menu. No, wait a minute. There's a dollar and a quarter stuff on the dollar menu, and then there's the $1.50 stuff. I would have to step off planet Earth for a week to go through that menu and try and figure out what's going on, because I'm going to say that McDonald's probably has something on there like, say, the basic hamburger that probably nobody ever buys, but it probably has been the same price for 3 years, and they'll say, what do you mean, we're not raising price or anything. But all I know is the dollar drink is now $2.50, right? So,
well, it's not just them raising the price,
right?
I know the taxes. I remember when we had a tax sales tax increase, and I saw like a 30-cent bump out of nowhere. So we've talked about this. That's the kind of stuff that doesn't show up in the CPI.
Well, downtown,
it's
11.
What the government's taken from you?
I think it's 11.5% downtown, right?
It's ridiculous like that. It was like when I grew up in Memphis, it was like 7 or 8%.
Yeah,
it was mostly for the state. And Tennessee still does not have a state income tax.
Really?
So yeah. So when I moved to Chicago, all of a sudden I'm like, what? State income taxes? I honestly never heard that before.
Well, Well, you're paying,
but the sales tax on everything, and I think at the time, like, sales tax was zero on food if you went to the grocery store.
Well, it's still less here, but on food. But, I mean, downtown, I think you pay, half a percent for the White Sox Park, right?
Yeah,
and I think it's, what is it? Is it 1.25% for the Pier and Exposition? Is that right, Manny? For the McCormick Place, that whole thing.
I think that's right.
I think. I mean, we'll dig through this because it's there's a bunch of. Anyway, we'll talk about this after. SP Futures now down 6. NASDAQ Futures down 50. Russell's going to tell us if this sell-off is kind of for real. It's sneaky and it's boring, but we've been down 2 days in a row pretty good. And we're leaking again this morning. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's Mel Weber on the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. SP Futures is now down 750. So we're leaking a little more during break. NASDAQ Futures down 50. We have a shaky screen here, man. Dow's down 30 over in Europe. We've got kind of nothing going on here. We got sell-offs in Asia, but Europe DAX down 4, unchanged. FTSE up 19.3%. CAC around up 31, that's 0.5%. Asia, not so much. Nikkei down a full 2%. 591, it's 2.03%. Shanghai down a penny. I guess we'll call that unchanged. Hang Seng down 513, 1.7. So the one that's not doing much is Shanghai. The other two are down pretty heavy. As a way of review on yesterday, a down day, Dow down 256.8%, S&P 500 down 28.7%, NASDAQ down 128.9%, so two down days in a row. Bonds, unchanged at 1.57, The Bund minus 0.26, so that's higher than it was a couple of weeks ago. Japan actually a little lower, though, at a positive 0.07. Oil down $1.34. It's 2%, 61.33. Brent down 121 to 65.36. Natural gas down 4 cents, 268. RBOB down 3 cents, 198, under 2 bucks. The gold up 560 at 1784. Trying to make it back to 1800. We'll see if they do. Silver up 29 cents. That's a big move there. 26.13. Copper up 3 cents, 424. And we've got our favorite Bitcoin down 1300 to 55,217. And it looks like this thing, well, I'm not a technical guy, especially when it comes to Bitcoin, but it seems to want to bounce off this 55,000 number. We'll see if it does. Maddie, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking pretty good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Everyone behaving themselves here on a Wednesday morning. Traffic building on the Kennedy in both directions, but no accidents to report. Eden's looking good. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford all quiet. Lakeshore Drive looking good in both directions. Only crash in the area is out in Lombard, western suburbs. There's a crash at 22nd and Butterfield, but everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, some chance of rain showers later on this afternoon, a high of 44, which is significantly warmer than yesterday, but still about 17 degrees below normal. So hopefully in the next few days here we'll warm up to at least normal.
If you had a choice, would you rather have been at Wrigley Field last night or in Cleveland at that game?
Well, I wouldn't have gone to either, but I did play softball last night, which was fun, and it wasn't windy, so actually once we got going it wasn't that bad, but it was pretty cold pregame. But I was telling Dan that nothing compared to that LaGrange night that we played 5 years ago. That was the coldest I've ever been, I think, in my life.
Well, that's where I was pitching in the second game, where the guy hit the pop-up almost over second base and it landed by the plate. It was so windy.
Yeah, it was windy, and it was the wind chill had to have been like 12, and we're out there trying to play 16-inch softball with no gloves. Again, cloudy with a high of 44 today and a chance of showers later on. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast with a high of 90. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, the White Sox beat Cleveland last night 8-5. Cubs topped the Mets 3-1, and it was the Diamondbacks edging out the Reds 5-4. Chief.
Hey, Russell, I just want to talk to you a little bit about is this Bitcoin's getting, well, I can't say it's not getting more mainstream. It sort of is, but there's some things that are sort of odd with it. When there appears to be an awful, well, the idea that somebody came down from the mountaintop like Ming the Merciless and started this thing up and went back up and left everybody their own devices, I think is the biggest crock of bull I've ever heard, but nobody's behind it. But anyway, that's just me being a Southsider. But my question is there are a lot of laws in place to where if you, for instance, have a PTI account and all of a sudden you on a 3-hour tour on the Minnow and you never heard from again, that someday somewhere we have to put that to this, we, not us, but the clearing firm, we'll put it to the state. And there's a lot of places where, your daughter can recover it and say, gee, that's my dad. He went on the Minnow. I haven't seen him in 30 years, but it looks like that money's his and she can go recover it. Is this, there's appear to be, from what I hear anecdotally, a lot of people that bought some stuff from, chunks of Bitcoin going back, 5, 10, 15, I don't know when the thing started, and have lost their passwords, their computer died, whatever happened, they lost their wallet. Now, is that money just gone, or do they have to be tied, painted with the same brush as everybody else, like PTI? You can't just take it. You gotta put it to the state. You gotta do something under somebody.
It's gone.
I'm saying, how could
it's gone?
How could it? Yeah, I mean, first of all, we know it's not gone. Somebody's getting it, so it's going somewhere.
No, it's gone.
Yeah.
You can't. If it gets, I mean, really, if I've got, I don't have any right now because I sold it all a little bit earlier. But when I had my handful of cryptocurrencies, I made sure there's a little envelope, open only if Russell disappears. And there's an explanation on how to get it out of there. Because there are lots of people who bought these things, lost their password, lost the crypto key, they can't get back to it. And I've seen estimates of like 1-2% of the Bitcoin that's floating around
nobody's ever going to be able to get to it.
All right, so my question is, never
it's
having
gone.
Done this.
It really is gone.
Okay, but never having done this,
mm-hmm.
I hear, I'm going to say buffoons, say stuff like, oh, man, it's nobody knows who's doing what, but everybody I've known who actually knows something about Bitcoin says, what are you talking about? Everything you do is traceable. It comes from one computer. There's nothing that's not traceable. So my question is, if Bitcoin wanted to, could they find you with that original purchase?
No.
Or
they could see it, but they wouldn't be able to transfer it to anybody else.
Okay, but I'm saying, if they wanted to, if Russell bought a Bitcoin at $25, whatever went down that low, 10 years, if they really wanted to, could they find you, even though you couldn't get back in and find the thing because you lost your password?
There's a way they can see my wallet number, not necessarily me, what I may have purchased in the past. It would be on the blockchain somewhere. But nobody would be able to, if I'm gone and you don't have the proper password/key that you need from me to transfer my stuff, you won't be able to do it.
But they would know you're right.
What's even worse is sometimes people will take their Bitcoin offline and put it into cold storage, which basically means putting it on a thumb drive where nobody can get to it. And there's some danger in losing that stuff as well.
But they would know your original IP address, right?
It's a wallet, but it's the same sort of theory, yeah.
So, in other words, if they wanted to, if they really cared, and somebody wasn't stealing them, which I'm sure people are, pretty sure, mm-hmm. You could go to the state Secretary of State's thing and say, whoever the idiot was who lived in Russell's house with this computer in 2006, bought a Bitcoin, and here's where it was, and here's the address at the time, and here's the computer number. Mm-hmm. You should be at least be able to do that, right?
Yeah, sort of, but the state still wouldn't be able to get it. I think in order to change the rules on the whole Bitcoin system or on the whole blockchain system, you have to, it's almost like a voting process where a majority of the coins outstanding need to be voted in a way to change the parameters around one way or another. Like if I suddenly owned 51% of all the Bitcoin outstanding, I could turn around and make the other 49% become mine. I really could, because I would have a majority of the votes, but it's set up where that would be a very difficult prospect in its own right.
Right.
Let's say 10 years down the road, 10% of the Bitcoin outstanding has become dormant, they could do something on the blockchain that says, well, those that have not been accounted for, like they used to put in the paper unclaimed, bank accounts, and they put your name in there. You could do something along those lines.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that
Bitcoin could be freed up. It could go to miners. It could be auctioned off. But it would take a consensus on the blockchain. It's not something that any outside entity could do.
Well, don't take this wrong, but Why do I give a rat's ass about the blockchain? I mean,
that's the ledger that it's much like, why would you give a rat's ass about your bank account that says you've got $5,000 in your checking account?
No. That's where I'm going with this. What I'm saying is, if Russell has an account at PTI, and Russell's never heard from, PTI ownership, meaning me and my brother and people, don't get the vote to not give Russell his money back. The state has said, hey, get that money over to the Secretary of State under Russell's name and from PTI. And I mean, in other words, that's not PTI's decision to make, or Citibank's or Merrill Lynch's. How does this become blockchain's decision to make? It's somebody's money. It's not theirs. And one thing I know for sure, if it sits there forever, somebody else is going to end up with it other than Russell.
Well, the thing is with the blockchain, and it's funny, I saw a cartoon this morning about who are they? Who are the they?
Well, that's my point.
All of my money. Who are the they behind everything? Yeah. There's no they with blockchain. What the they is everybody that owns Bitcoin.
See, I honestly believe
the whole community. It's all of it. So
it would take a consensus of all of your clients to change some sort of rules.
But I'm saying, how does that state law not work for those people? We're going too far with this, but I'm saying I don't care what your what the blockchain says. I'm the Secretary of State. That money's not yours. Get it over here.
Right. Well, you can't get it. How's the Secretary of State going to? They can't get it. If I die and nobody knows the key to transfer or free up my Bitcoin, you know, if it's on the wallet secure like that, there's just no way there. You can try to hack it, but
all right. Well, I'm just saying
the computing power. You know, the computing power that would really be needed to hack the blockchain and change the parameters around Bitcoin. I don't even think the U.S. government has that much computing power.
Well, all I'm saying is I refuse to believe there's not a man or men behind the curtain still.
There may be. I mean, there truly may be, but like great religions and some other things, there was one person behind it, but it took a whole big old group to make it, you know, flourish and become successful. And that's what's going on with Bitcoin right now. Plus, the constant... You don't have an overall trust of the government as far as handling our monetary policy, and a lot of people that have a belief in Bitcoin and that sort of technology to be the way that we exchange, you know, crypto money, I guess, for goods or store something that we can spend in the future. It's not that much of a departure from the banking system that we have now. The difference is it's not regulated, not really regulated, and there's no real central authority that controls it.
You kind of mischaracterized me there a little bit.
Not terribly, but
no. Well, I have every confidence that the people who are, let's say, the Fed, are doing what they're doing to benefit some people versus others. Therein lies the rub.
That's your lack of confidence in them doing what they should be doing for all of us. And that's what I meant by that statement.
I actually, you know, and you and I'm going to accuse you of this. You and I agree on this, that as you get less and less companies, meaning more, and more, and the amount of power gets constantly in fewer and fewer hands. To you and I that are a little older, I think that we see that the Fed is now only favoring less and less people, and we're not it. I mean, there was a time where they had to favor unions like a little bit because they had power. There was a bigger group of people they had to sort of try and deal
mm-hmm.
with, and now I think that group is getting smaller and smaller, and it's. You know, I mean, when you clearly, even the amount of banks, at least when you and I were, you know, just getting out of school, they favored the banks, but there were a hell of a lot more banks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were how many major banks were in Chicago? Seven? Six? I mean, they weren't all Citibank, but they were all pretty good size.
Yeah. A couple of them were regionals, and a couple of them were, big national banks.
But, I mean, you don't have... It just keeps getting less and less. It's in every, mm-hmm. industry. There's the real guys, and then there's the schmoes that feed into the real guys. I mean, Citigroup is more than happy to let some regional bank do the work for them and drive deposit it there overnight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's but my when we were talking a little about money supply earlier, let's get off the Bitcoin thing. I'm looking at this Biden infrastructure and then the family thing afterward. It's not. I think. Russell, that if I was one of your PhD students and I wrote a serious paper regarding the stuff the Fed did in the last year because of the COVID and because of the very unusual nature of what happened, you and I could probably, if we had some sort of an end date on it and some way of how we were going to recover from our economic, I'll use the term largesse, we could probably make a pretty strong case that we did a pretty good job, that a lot of it was needed, maybe a little too much, but still. And if we were making plans right now to to bring that back in somewhat of a gradual manner, even you and I would probably be not all that critical of what went on last year and the amount of money splashed around. We would be critical probably of the amount of money that was splashed around before that we probably didn't need for the last 8 years that set us up in a position where it really was a problem. But out of the gate, if things were normal starting the last day before St. Patrick's Day when they closed the saloons last year, if everything would have been normal and all of a sudden we just did this for 9 or 10 months to keep people afloat or try to, I'm not so sure that you and I would be all that critical. Our criticism stems from the actions beforehand when we didn't have any problems and they acted like we did. And now there doesn't seem to be any... That now, instead of just being the manna from heaven that we know is supposed to stop, we're hoping it keeps going. And now we're talking about two more massive spending plans where there's no attempt whatsoever to borrow the money. We're just going to print it. And to the point where they think this is normal now. This isn't even a one-time COVID deal. And that's, I think, where both of our criticisms lie. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. No, and they probably, if they hadn't been printing money like they were leading up to COVID, they probably wouldn't have had to go to the extreme that they did during COVID.
Right.
Because they would have had more bullets.
But now we're talking about, we have this discontinuity in the economy, and it's going to get worse with inflation because, you know, half the people are still going to be making $37,000 or less, and now they're inflating 12% a year, wherever it's going to get to. And now we're talking about we're going to fix that with some massive child care credits, some massive this, some massive that. The constant print money fix, is there no thought at all that this isn't... If it's ever a good idea, it's a temporary good idea. It seems like we're making the move and that this is just the permanent way of doing things. I mean, can they really be this dumb, Russell? I mean, I honestly say that legitimately. Can they really be that dumb that every year now we can just print $3 and $4 trillion and we're taxing on two and that's just it forever?
I like to believe that, you know, they'll be able to work the debt down over a long period of time. The other thing is that they're going to be, it'll right itself if we get a big bout of inflation as well. And maybe that's what they're counting on.
How's it going to right itself?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you have a whole lot of inflation, then the money that's outstanding right now, you know, basically loses its value and you end up in real terms with the same amount of cash out there.
Well, you have, because of, again, what we just were talking about.
Yeah, it's painful.
But because of where they're starting, in normal times, if you inflated things, you're paying people back with money that's worth less, correct, is what you're saying?
Right.
All right, but now, if you inflate things to the point where your interest goes up, your debt is so huge that you can't catch it because your interest payments are going to overwhelm whatever you gain on the inflation. Right? Or, I mean, that's my opinion.
Yeah, but no. But see, on the other side of that is it, and I think the balance between the higher interest you're going to have to pay and on the new debt that gets issued, but the value of the dollars that you're having to pay out right now to service the current debt, they kind of get inflated away.
Well, how much, I mean, you don't. I'll ask you a question.
I mean, not magically and not as smoothly as I said it in 30 seconds, but it does work itself out. It's just a painful process.
Well, what is...
And the more they keep doing the crap they're doing, the more painful it's going to be on the end, and I think that's where you and I get all fired up.
Well, what do you... I mean, these are questions that I have because you are the professor. Our debt right now, depending on which number you believe, and this one I can't... Maybe this is the first question for you. Where they'll say our national debt is $28 trillion, and then it'll say that the number really is more like 34 somewhere, right? I mean, well, I don't know where they're getting the 34, but that's because here
is it the present value versus the true future value?
I'm not sure, but it'll say I can hear the federal budget deficit official is $3.2 trillion. The federal spending actual, the budget deficit actual is 4.2. So there's like a 25% difference between, Carl's always talking about this, but I don't know where this other number comes from. If they're talking about on and off budget activity that exceeds the annual revenue. So
it's like Social Security off budget.
No, I don't think so.
It's not. Okay, I'm not
positive
there. Separate somehow.
But I'm saying let's call it
supposed to be.
But I'm saying we're now in a situation where your income taxes are, let's say the payroll taxes just come in one pocket and out the other, so you can't count on those, right? Your income taxes are $1.7 trillion. So we're really talking, you know, 2 to 2.5 times we're paying per year. That's, you know, than what we're taking in. Which, you know, it's kind of a lot. So I guess what I'm saying is, if what do you out of this number, say $30 trillion national debt, what do you suppose the average length of time is for that debt? Because I don't know the answer to that.
Oh gosh, I'm going to say 10 years.
You think it's that high?
Because that's just kind of in the middle of the issuance. I think it used to be longer, and then we stopped issuing 30-year bonds for some time. But my guess would be in the 5 to 10-year range.
Wow, you see, I would have thought that the amount of short-term stuff, the rollover bills and notes and the 90 days and stuff are real high.
You think that would overwhelm it?
I don't know if it overwhelms it. I don't know. I mean, I guess what I'm questioning
is... Should I send an email out to my class and... Say first one that gets this answer to me gets an A and doesn't have to take the final.
You can't go with just an apple anymore.
No, you really got to bribe them.
God, the price of bribery is going up. Well, whatever you get. But I mean, let's say it's, well, if it's instant. I mean, if we went from 1%, which it has to be now, to 3, or say 4. I mean, 3%. That's another $900 billion a year. That's for God's sake, that's 2/3 of the tax revenue. That's a lot. I mean, I don't know how you catch that.
I don't either. The numbers, it just starts to get maybe so overwhelming, and that's another reason that, because those numbers are so beyond our perception, it starts to become very difficult to wrap your head around it.
Yeah, I mean, because right now, here's what they. This is something else new on here. We only got 30 seconds. Debt, federal debt to GDP ratio. In 1960, it was 52%. So the total debt after World War II and everything was half the GDP. In 1980, we actually had knocked it down quite a bit because we paid a lot of that debt off. We're down to 34%. 2000 up to 58. Now it's 130%. So we're talking. The debt is 130% of our yearly GDP. There probably were a couple of years during World War II when we had that going, but we just borrowed that money from the population.
Yeah.
But it's bad, Russell. I mean, I'm not so sure I'd want that job. I'd have to bring you with just so we could commiserate together. But I'm not so sure I can come up with a solution here. Do you? Can you?
I don't think there's it would be a very long-term painful plan at this point.
The 100-year plan.
It'd be like putting, you know, you're putting yourself on a payment plan when you lost your job and you're $200,000 in debt. You may get out of it in 20 years, but it's going to take a long, long, long. You're going to have to Shawshank it.
Yeah, I think we'd be the
away every day.
Well, let's talk about it next week. At least it'll be a weekly plan, maybe the 100-year plan. SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 41. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't f***ing know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727.
Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.